Hey, I'm Dalton Ross, and welcome to the EW Morning Live podcast, where we bring you the best TV and movie interviews from our Entertainment Weekly morning show on Sirius XM. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, follow us on Twitter at EWML Podcast, and get a little taste of what we offer every day on Sirius XM channel 105. With that said, now there's nothing to it but to get to it, so sit back and enjoy this week's edition of the EW Morning Live podcast.
This is EW Morning Live with Dalton Ross and Jessica Shaw on Entertainment Weekly Radio.
Welcome back to EW Morning Live. Dalton Ross here with you. So excited for our next guest. She's the star of Enlightened. I say that because that's a way to convince myself it's still on the air because I love that TV show so much. But you also know her. You just saw her get another nomination for Big Little Lies, and she stars in a little indie film that just came out called Star Wars The Last Jedi, which just tore up the theaters this weekend, where she plays Vice Admiral Holdo. She's Laura Dern.
Hey.
I'm so excited to have you here.
Wow, I love that introduction.
Oh my God.
And Enlightened. Thank you for bringing that up.
So, such a great show. Wow. I mean, I love that show so much.
Thank you.
And, I mean, what is it like when you get the word that they're not going to be continuing that program? I mean, I guess maybe you're used to it. You know, you do a lot of movies, you move on, you do a project, you move on, and that's it. It's rearview mirror. Or did that one sting a little more?
Well, you know, we never intended it to be very long form, but I think we always thought, myself and Mike White, that a third season would be a trilogy of sorts of what happens with Amy when she actually has a platform. So that's the heartbreak of it. But the great news, the great cultural news is we made it because it was a culture of apathy. And we made it, and at the beginning, people watching were like, who is this sort of batshit, excuse my language, girl?
You can go there, Sirius XM.
And now we're all Amy Jellicoe.
I know, it's amazing.
It's a culture of fighters and protesters and whistleblowers everywhere, and it makes me so happy.
Well, you never, right? All these other shows keep coming back, Laura. You never know. I know you're a busy lady. You got a lot going on,
Listen,
but we see all these other shows coming back.
Never say never.
Never say never.
Mm-hmm. Just putting it out there.
There's so much I want to talk about with Star Wars and your character. I guess I'll start with the hair. Everyone start with the hair.
Yes.
I mean, how amazing is that hair, and how much do you miss not having that hair?
I miss it. In fact, I might go dye my hair later.
You should.
Today. It's the best color ever. I hope, I pray it catches on and there will be Holdo's 8-year-old purple-haired girls running all over the U.S. It would make me so happy.
Well, as a father of a daughter named Violet, I've appreciated that color especially. So,
I mean,
it's great.
At least the wig, the Holdo wig, you have to get Violet.
Yes, right?
Yeah.
She's got to rock that.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, a lot of people saw everyone saw the movie this weekend, but for those few that haven't, we won't get into any big spoiler stuff. But what I love about this character so much is she's got a really fascinating arc. And what you can say is that it's sort of like, you meet her and you're kind of like, oh, okay, I meet her. She's with the resistance, and she's an officer, and I like this person. Oh, wait, maybe I don't like this person. Now I really don't like this person. Wait, now I like her again. Wait, now I love her. Like, you're all over the map with her, all constantly through this movie, which must be really exciting.
It really is, and it, in fact, is exactly how Rian Johnson, our brilliant writer and director, set up the character in his description to me when we first met to talk about it. He really wanted, as he does in each storyline, kind of weaves this brilliant tale of the gray, of people's struggle between the shadow and the light and not sure which one is going to win, I think is a big theme within the film, and certainly a struggle that we witness with Holdo.
And so, you know, she sort of shows up, and here we got this new character, which happens in Star Wars all the time. I know she's in one of the books as well, but like, tell me about what we don't see about her in the movie, like any sort of backstory that either Rian told you, or you created yourself, or you got from source. How did you tell us what's her life before she shows up when we meet her in this movie?
I think, you know, what I learned, even though in a book it may go to all many kinds of places that I was never privy to, but certainly the background that I knew for the film was that she was under Leia's command, and that was her not only teacher politically and in terms of how to protect the resistance, but really esoterically, like Luke as a teacher has been taught, and as we see that teaching continue about the Force, you can feel that Leia was that for her, that her wisdom was passed on to Holdo. And, you know, I mean, what I love about the Resistance is the Resistance, and particularly in this Star Wars, is meant to be reflective of what the world really looks like. And I think it's interesting that in this galaxy, it's led by females, and it's an incredibly diverse world, and it's a progressive voiced group of hippies in a way, that are there to protect the light. And I think that's deeply a part of Leia's background and therefore Holdo's.
And you mentioned this, that, I mean, you're absolutely right in terms of not just having General Organa, but now having a Vice Admiral Holdo. You see lots of female fighter pilots. You see them at the very beginning of the film. Someone play a very key role. This is something that we've seen in Star Wars to a degree with Rey and then in Rogue One, but not to this degree with this many women playing a key part. We've had some very key women, but not this many.
Yeah, and that was the most amazing thing. Yesterday, we were doing press in London, and four of us standing together as the central female characters, tragically void of our true princess, our muse, Carrie Fisher. But it was an amazing experience just when they were like, we'd like the women of Star Wars, and having this press tour around that was just such an incredible feeling, and all really diverse. And, you know, again, I love the complication of Star Wars is that it's not about bad or good. It's all wrestling in all of us, and we all have to make choice, and that the female characters are reflective of that, like the male characters have been, which is beautiful.
I mean, obviously, you know, famous parents, you've been, you know, won awards, been nominated for Academy Awards. You know this business and this town like anything, but was it still a little jarring or weird to hit Star Wars scale? Like, was that new to you at all? I mean, you've done a million press tours before, but,
you know, when you're looking for the trademarks of a collaborative, safe, homey, independent movie, you meet your writer director, he's made Looper, you love that movie, yeah. He's like, let's collaborate on something. He describes the character. He's like, you know, and I'm, you know, Oscar Isaac is working on it, and Benicio del Toro is going to work on it. It's like, oh, great. This sounds like every $6 million movie I've worked on. And we're going to improvise. We're going to kind of create character and define what her look should be. And it all feels delicious. And we're rehearsing in our jeans, and we're just talking about story. And you walk on set, and he says rolling, and you open your eyes, and the first thing you see is C-3PO. It all hits you. All I can say is the first take, I completely blew because I started to cry.
Oh, my God.
And we had to go again. It was so beautiful.
That's incredible.
It's amazing. And then we had a coffee break, and so I went over to get a tea, and Ryan said, oh, Laura, there's a fan of yours here who would love to say hi. And I feel this tap on my shoulder, and I turn around, and I look up, and then I look up a little bit more and a little bit more, and it's Chewbacca. And he hugs me. Come on. Guys, that's a good day at work.
It's funny because we're talking right now, we're recording this on a Thursday. I'm going to see it for my second time tonight. And the first time I saw it was at a press screening. And so you go to this press screening, and it's all super jaded New York media types, you know, TCFS, too cool for school, can't, like, you know, be bothered, this and that. And people are cheering, and they're clapping, and they're laughing, and you don't see that at a lot of those types of screenings. And it just gets to people like myself and others who have just, this franchise has such an incredible place in their heart that they can't help themselves.
I love it. Isn't that amazing?
And there's a moment of yours that we won't spoil, a very big moment near the end where everyone kind of lost it. It was very cool.
That's so cool. I'm so excited.
We're talking with Laura Dern, star of Star Wars, The Last Jedi, which you've probably already seen twice. Carrie Fisher, what was it like getting to work with her on this film?
She is the unapologetic, brave, without a mask, fearless self that we learned that she presented. And she gave us that as Carrie Fisher. She gave us that energy as Princess Leia. And it's rare to meet an icon who is equally iconic in the role she gave us as the person she presents, because she thinks you should lead with all of it, your flaws, your whole self, and be fearless in who you are. And I can't say I've met another person like that who walks in a room and is only disgusted if you're not your complete self too. So it was extraordinary. And she was one of the funniest people any of us could have ever known.
And, you know, I've got a total, our listeners know that I have a total guy crush on Oscar Isaac. I have for years. The guy is just absolutely unbelievable, playing so many different roles, everything from Show Me a Hero, which was just extraordinary, to some of his, you know, other work. It's just, he's incredible. And you're probably the character, that's the character you have the most scenes with in this film. I mean, what was it like working with him?
He's incredible. I mean, it's ridiculous. He's an incredible actor, and we love each other so much that from the movie we now go on vacation together.
Wow.
And spend as much time together as possible. We've gotten to do most of our press together these last weeks on the press tour, and we have a really interesting dynamic in the film. And as Oscar put it, he was like, you know, it's so fun to have given room, Ryan gave us the room, to have an audience feel the dynamic between two people that in different circumstances, these are people who would be really attracted to each other for all sorts of reasons, and but there may be different points of view.
Right.
And so that's such a fun dynamic, as opposed to just saying, oh, they don't like each other from the beginning, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It has much more room to play if you long for it to be one thing, but it just can't. Is really fun. And he's just brilliant. I got to see him do Hamlet this summer at the Public, and that's one of the most extraordinary performances I've ever seen. He's amazing. And he is a hero with hero hair.
Tell me about it. I'm so jealous of his hair.
Everybody should be
in
love with Oscar Isaac.
You and him have the best hair. That is why you're in so many scenes together. They're like, get Dern and Isaac in as many scenes together as possible with that
100%.
Hair.
We won best hair of Star Wars. We are the hair duo of Star Wars.
It's absolutely incredible. What was it? What was it
hear
like?
Hear that, L'Oreal? I'm feeling a duo campaign.
That's it.
Hero hair.
What was it like getting to see the movie all put together? I mentioned you've got a big scene, and but, you know, as Star Wars, obviously there's always post-production that needs to happen and things that happen where you're not going to see it till you see it. What was it like when you finally saw this whole thing put together?
It was amazing. We all saw it, the cast, almost all of us saw it together for the first time in a little vault. I won't even call it a room, with like security surrounding us. And it was amazing because the minute that crawl starts, I'm getting chills saying that to
you. Yeah.
We all are 7 years old again.
Yep.
And, you know, eight of us sitting there, literally holding hands, so excited. We were transported back to the first time we saw Star Wars. We literally, all of us, I felt like, forgot we were in the movie. You're just in it. And it's amazing. The music starts and you're thrown into that galaxy. It's so fun and also very emotional. It's a very deep, profound experience, that movie.
What's interesting, too, is Star Wars movies always have a lot of different people in different places. So this person's on their ship doing one thing. This person's on a mission over here. This person's doing some training, what have you. So you're seeing all your stuff kind of with the post-production, but you're also, I imagine, seeing a lot of other stuff that you've kind of never seen before in terms of what the other characters are doing.
Exactly, which was amazing. And it was also incredible that it really did feel like a very intimate family, and we did all work together every day, but it was like a high school experience where, like, you're running off to dance class and somebody else is having their history final and everything's happening at once. And but that was the joy of it. And we'd eat lunch together, and there was a ping pong table that became the famed spot for us to meet at the trailers and play ping pong. Oscar will tell everyone that he beat Kylo Ren every single time. And Adam does love a mean game of ping pong. But it did feel really familial, and training and working out together with a couple of the ladies, Kelly, who's amazing, this being this new amazing character of Rose in the film. So it's just so incredible to feel like a family, also because we were the only people we could talk about it with. So for 2 years we've had this experience that we couldn't share, and then see the movie and have everything come alive, and have it be so character based that so much of what we did is what's impactful about the film. And the effects are phenomenal, and the puppetry and the characters, and Andy Serkis's incredible work. I mean, all of these things just, you know, make this enormous spectacle of an experience.
And we're talking with Laura Dern about Star Wars The Last Jedi, and as we mentioned with my love of Enlightened, we also you also done a lot of stuff on TV as well, and got your Emmy win, and just got the Golden Globe nomination for Big Little Lies. Congratulations.
Thank you. So,
now, do you get up early to find out, or do you just kind of all find out when I find out? How does that work for you, or where were you even when they nominated? You may have been overseas.
I was landing. I just would like to say this. I really don't mean to be bragging. This is me as a 7-year-old. I was landing on my flight, sitting next to C-3PO, and you know,
right,
just talking about space. And I was like, "See, so what was it like when?" And then Luke and I were talking, and and it is a pinch me moment to be doing press with Luke Skywalker.
Wow.
And we found out as we landed. So the first hug I got was from C-3PO congratulating me on my Golden Globe nomination, which I think is how I require all good news to come from C-3PO.
Incredible. We just heard the news. It's coming back for season 2. I haven't heard your name yet mentioned there in season 2. Hopefully I have some news on that soon.
I think hopefully you will. Hopefully, yes.
I cannot wait to see that. You were so good on that show.
Oh,
I mean,
thank you.
What was it like to sort of see, you know, all the recognition that's got? And a show that's that story, at least from the source material, is kind of completed. So now would have to go in a sort of new direction.
David Kelly genius brain direction. I love those characters. I love being part of an ensemble of, you know, again, these amazing, powerful women. Reese Witherspoon and I had made the film Wild the year before we started Big Little Lies. The same producers, our same director, Jean-Marc Vallée. So we were all very close, our same cinematographer. So we just felt like we went from one family right into this next experience. Nicole and I, having known each other for a long time and never having worked together, and Shay and I are like family and did a film together. So it was amazing to actually be on set truly with family. And I mean, if I were Renata, she would definitely say, I'm the best character. So so it would be really fun to play her again, because she's overwhelming. And you don't have to think about your own life when you're Renata, because she takes up all the space and all the air in the room. It's so much fun.
So are you prepared now for next Halloween to see yourself in all these trick-or-treaters dressed as you now? Because I'll tell you, when I was a little kid, I was Darth Vader. My kids were Princess Leia. My daughter was Princess Leia. My son was Boba Fett once. I think Luke Skywalker once. I mean, like, every kid's going to be a Star Wars character.
Every kid. I was, too. And I really am hoping Violet will be Holdo next Halloween.
Right?
But that will be mind-blowing. I have to say, this Halloween, one of my great joys was there were a lot of Twin Peaks fans. And Rian Johnson and his amazing girlfriend, who's just a brilliant writer and journalist and movie genius, played Agent Dale Cooper and Diane, my character from Twin Peaks, which made me so happy. And a lot of dogs. I noticed this year people were sending things on social media. There were many Dr. Ellie Sattler pugs and labs. So having a sea of purple-haired girls would, oh my God, nothing would make me happier.
It's incredible. Just the cosplay from now until eternity, because that's really the thing. It's not just next year. You know where the Star Wars is. It's now forever. Like, that character is now forever, you know?
Yeah, and not speaking to any of the specific characters, but learning when something is iconically heroic or iconically evil.
Yeah.
Like, those characters have this weight
that
I'm noticing in a different way than anything I've ever done. Just we had a premiere in London, and it was the first time I've experienced children coming up, and they kind of pull away as they meet you because it's sort of overwhelming.
It's intense, yeah.
And that feeling, I remember that feeling as a kid when you see Mickey Mouse for the first time, you know, and you're a little bit scared and in awe. It's so exciting. I mean, that's what's beautiful about imagination. And I was raised by actors, so I love the movies.
That'll do it. Well, Laura Dern, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Love the new movie and your role in it. And
thank you.
I'm excited to go see it for like probably the fifth time this
Good.
Week.
I can't wait to see it again, too.
It was incredible. All right, I'll be back with more on EW Morning Live.
EW Morning Live with Dalton Ross and Jessica Shaw on Entertainment Weekly Radio.
Welcome back to EW Morning Live. Dalton and Jessica here with you. We're joined by one of our favorite guests. So happy to have him. Better Late Than Never had a special preview episode last night, and then season two premieres officially January 1st on NBC. The one and only Henry Winkler is in studio.
Yay!
I left my phone in the bathroom.
Oh, my. All right. Well.
Uh-oh.
I left my phone in the bathroom on the dispenser.
Okay. I can't wait to see how.
Oh, man. Someone has just hacked into Henry Winkler's social media accounts.
Okay. No.
It's a poll.
Joe's going to go.
It's a poll.
It's a poll.
There you go.
There you go.
We have a team running out to get the phone.
We'll see how she makes it into the
men's
room.
What's going to be on his Twitter by the time she gets there.
This gives me anxiety beyond all anxiety. Okay, this is terrible. My wife just left the studio.
And then the phone's in the pocket.
Oh,
my phone was in the pocket.
Oh, no. You better be given a good holiday gift to her. Now
I'm going to lose my phone.
She's pushing her way into the men's bathroom.
Oh, this is horrible.
At Sirius XM now.
It's in my pocket.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
And she didn't bring her phone with her. You can't text her because she left her phone here.
Yes, she did. On all over Europe, on Better Late Than Never, I lost my phone. And the executive from Universal Television had a beeper thing that he could, and he found my phone
under the
garbage cans in Madrid.
Isn't that where you also found Terry Bradshaw?
Under the garbage cans in Madrid.
And where was his clothing?
His clothing
in the garbage can.
Was at the beach.
Mm. Yeah, I was going to watch last night's preview episode, and then I heard Terry Bradshaw was going to get naked. I had to think twice. I had to think twice about whether I wanted to see that or not.
Do you know that when he gets naked, he is so big, it doesn't fit on a widescreen.
Now, how did that actually happen? Did the producer say, look, one of you got to drop your clothes?
You know what?
And he said, me.
There is a producer, one of the creative producers of the show. His name is Jason Ehrlich. And Jason has a way of very benignly coming up to you and saying, look, I want you to be a model in the art class in Barcelona. And they're going to mold you in clay. Everybody had a pound of clay. Would you be a model? And I'm saying, in a house coat, in a bathrobe, in a towel, in a jockstrap, in a nothing. Oh, my God. And then I saw myself on screen. And then I thought
Adonis,
to myself.
Adonis.
Yeah, you know what? In the turkey family. I'm not kidding. I had all of the wings, all of the legs of the butterball we had just had on Thanksgiving.
Amazing. And absolutely incredible. Henry Winkler, his family's re-entering the studio. He's showing them the phone.
Now, can I tell you, did you see the non-judgmental, loving way that my wife came
back in? That's true. That's true.
Uh-huh.
It's sort of like she expected. She had
Thank
to look like,
Stacey.
Okay, yeah, here we go again. Like, here
Henry
we go.
Henry and his phone.
Yeah,
it's true. It's true.
Right, so, Henry,
yes,
last season when you were here, we were talking about pork vagina.
Yes. And elephants.
Yes, as we're wont to do on the program. What sort of European delicacies are you guys putting down
this
year?
We had a camel burger that was a little weird.
Camel burger?
Yes.
Gamey,
yes.
I'm guessing.
It was gamey.
Yeah.
Yes, it was. And sweaty. You know, humpy.
Humpy, yes.
Yes.
Retained water.
You couldn't take it all in one bite. Now, can I just say, if you meet a camel?
Mm. Yes.
I took mine for orthodonture work because the teeth were in every direction.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, they don't brush. It was the worst breath I've ever smelled in my life.
Yeah. I mean, was it because you rode an elephant last season, too?
I wept when I met Natalie. Natalie the elephant in Chiang Mai. I wept when I met her. You could feel her compassion come off this big pachyderm. You could feel the spit being shot at you from a camel.
And did you ride
Shower.
One as well?
We rode a camel. We rode it up to our hotel. We got off the camel and handed the camels to the valet.
Because getting up on a camel, they go, because their knees are like,
That's right.
what, quadruple joint, double joint. So they go backwards
That's
and
right.
forward. Like, that is scary. I've ridden a camel, too.
It really is scary.
Yeah.
Getting up is a 5 or 7 point turn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's insane.
That sounds like quite a process. You guys do a lot of dress up on this show.
Yes, we do.
What's your best outfit?
Mine, I like taffeta. So I constantly ask if I can. Whatever it is, can I be in taffeta? No, they put us in situations I do not ask, even though I'm an executive producer. I never know what we're going to do.
Mm.
But Twitter last night blew up after the premiere of Better Late Than Never on NBC. It was, people said, oh my gosh, I waited. I haven't laughed this hard. I've watched the show with my sister, with my daughter across the country on the phone. Amazing.
It's the Lederhosen.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Lederhosen.
Lederhosen.
Now,
that'll do it.
If you go commando with Lederhosen, you need nut powder. I'm just telling you now.
Wait, is that a thing? Is that like wearing a kilt? Like, you don't wear anything under it?
No, but you can choose to.
Oh, okay. I didn't know it yet.
No. You can wear some underwear. You know, like they have those. This is what it's like when you don't wear this in underwear. And you're squozing in a press for olives. Or this is what you can, you know.
Tell us more about the nut power powder.
Now, well, that is, you know what you do? You sprinkle it on the leather. Okay. And then on yourself.
Mm.
Yes. And you grind up almonds. And I'm telling you, it makes it. You
grind
slide,
up almonds. What are the almonds doing?
Nut powder. Good. You slide into the leather.
That's amazing. I loved seeing all of you just get your Maria Von Trapp on and like being in the
How beautiful was that?
Amazing.
The hills were alive.
I mean, I loved it, and it looked like you all were genuinely having
exactly
a blast doing
I'm
that.
I'm telling you, except for Bill. You know, Bill didn't like the movie. He didn't like Sound of Music. He said that his friend Christopher Plummer was in it, and Christopher Plummer didn't like the movie.
Yeah, that's
yes,
true.
Yes, I know. Yes. I don't like knowing you know, that.
He said he called it the sound of mucus.
Mm-hmm.
But here we are. I'm telling you, you step off the bus. And you look at this field. The field is green, and it is populated by multicolored flowers, purples and reds and yellows and blues. And then you pass along this beautiful meadow, and the Alps are there, and they're blue, and they are covered in white snow, and the sky is steel blue with white clouds. It was breathtaking, except for Bill.
Is that for Bill?
Did you guys bust out in song ever? Did you sing any?
I'm not a singer. So I busted out in something that sounded kind of close to the hills are alive with, the, you know, like that.
It's mm-hmm. pretty mm-hmm. good voice.
Yeah, like I to like me. That.
What about, now, I hesitate to ask this because you guys are absolutely a bunch of spring chickens, but was there anything physically that was, I remember last season you guys had to walk up all these stairs, it was crazy.
Well, running up the hills at the base, at the foothill of the Alps, that was pretty big.
Yeah.
And you know, for me, any physicality is big. You know, I have to negotiate with my knees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my entire body is moving forward, and I leave my knees behind.
Just like your phone.
I'm not kidding.
Who got recognized the most in Europe?
George Foreman, hands down.
It's always the athlete, isn't it?
In George Foreman in Asia.
Yeah.
George Foreman in Europe. No matter where we went, this was so touching. We went to Lithuania, and this was a surprise for George. The entire family of the man he beat in the Olympics when he was 19 years old came to visit us in Lithuania.
Wow.
And he said, you know, this is what you learn from this show. Don't put off till tomorrow what you can do today. Because he said, it has always been in my mind to visit this man and his family. And the man died 2 years ago.
Oh,
wow.
And he said to the family, this is how gracious George Foreman is. He said to the family, you know, if it was 1 second longer, he could have won. I was 1 second away of losing the gold medal. And he was a great opponent. He was a great opponent. And he met his wife and his daughters and his grandchildren and his brother. It was quite a moment, really.
That's special.
It's incredible. We only have another minute or so, Henry, but I want to ask you about Hank Zipser.
I have more than 1 minute, so you can keep going.
My kids love the books, and Jessica's kids
too.
Are now the age that they're reading the books.
Yes.
And you told us that you're just working on another one.
Yes, that's right. The next one will come out in February, where he has to build a robot, and he can't do it. But he finds a kid in the playground who's all by himself, and the kid might be on the spectrum, but he is brilliant at building robots. And so Hank needs him. The child feels needed, and there's a relationship that builds. Hank doesn't quite know why he's different, and he's kind of like weird, but then all of a sudden, respect ensues. And the very last Hank Zipser is going to be next year. We've written it. Hank Zipser is finished now forever.
I don't like hearing that.
I know.
I don't like hearing that at all.
Well, it's an amazing,
it's an incredible
It just came out
series.
In Hebrew.
Incredible
it
run.
It just came out in Hebrew.
If you guys have missed those books, you definitely need to check it out.
They'll make your kid laugh.
Yeah, 100%.
They're wonderful.
100%.
You know, they're not self-help books. They're not, oh, woe is me, I've got a problem, and so does Hank. Hank has a problem, but his glass is half full. He just spills it everywhere.
All right. Yep. They're playing us off with the music. It's like we're at the Oscars or something.
I know.
Yeah, right, and to break a.
You mean I don't give my acceptance?
I know. Well, the orchestra's there. They're like, someone's giving you one of these.
Give it to us during the
break. All right.
Break.
Henry Winkler, one of our favorite guests.
Yes.
Better late than never. It'll be back January 1st. Thank you so much for coming in.
I'm so happy
to
see you both.
It's the best.
And your smiles.
Aww. Thanks, Henry.
We'll be back with more on EW More Live. Congratulations on finding your
phone. Thank you.
My heart wants to sing every song.
For more TV and movie interviews sent right to you, subscribe to the EW Morning Live podcast on iTunes. And to get 24-hour entertainment news and views, check out Entertainment Weekly Radio at channel 105 on Sirius XM.